In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Mighty Manfred here with you in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and it's time for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Recently, we had an Alice Cooper week in the Underground Garage in honor of the new album, The Revenge of Alice Cooper. It features lead singer Alice, reunited with original band members Dennis Dunaway, the bass player, Neil Smith, the drummer, and Michael Bruce, the guitarist. Not only did I speak with Alice on our coolest conversations, but also with Neil and Dennis. This podcast features Neil as my guest. Before we join with him, we'll take a listen to the song, Crap That Gets in the Way of Your Dreams, off the new album, followed by my interview with Neil, on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
When I was 16, I got my first guitar. I learned to play it in my mom's garage. I played it night and day.
With you here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and we've got a very special coolest conversations going on today, capping off our Alice Cooper week by having not only lead singer Alice join me as our guest, but I'm also speaking with bassist Dennis Dunaway. But first up is the drummer man, Neil Smith. How are you, Neil?
Hey, man, I'm doing great, man, and thank you very much for having me on. And I'm over in Finland and getting ready for the 25th, the big release day.
Yes, actually, that's today. Records out today, the new album, The Revenge of Alice Cooper, featuring our coolest song in the world, Wild Ones. Have you been enjoying Alice Cooper week here in the Underground Garage?
It's been great. I mean, we had to keep it a secret for 3 years, so of course we're bursting at the seams trying to get the word out and enjoying the big release parties today.
Right, well, we're doing our part. I know that Alice Vincent is from Detroit originally. He moved to Phoenix as a kid. What about yourself? Where are you from originally?
Yeah, Glenn Buxton and I were both, we didn't know each other, but we were from Akron, Ohio originally. And he moved out in his early teens, and I moved out to Phoenix when I was 15. And then, you know, we were in the same area, and I've been going out there ever since. And I that's what also led up to writing songs for the new album. I bought a house there in 2015, and I live in New England most of the time, except where I'm Finland and in Phoenix, but originally Glenn and I were both from Ohio.
Ohio, and what took your family out to Phoenix when you were 15?
Well, my mother was divorced and a single mom, so I've always been very, very, very pro single mothers. And she got a job opportunity, like a lot of people do, you know, someplace else in the country. And she also had some friends that we knew from church back in the day that had moved out there. And she went out there to visit them, and she was totally in love with Arizona. And within a couple of months, we were there, and I started going to Camelback High School that year, finished my last 2 years of high school in 1963.
So drums, you're the drummer, man. Was that your first instrument?
Actually not. My mother was a huge Glenn Miller fan during World War II in the 40s. So she took up trombone and played in the high school marching band in her little town of Sharon Center, Ohio, and played trombone. So when I wanted to play an instrument when I was in elementary school, she said the only instrument they have is a trombone. And that's what I had to start with, even though I was banging on pots and pans on the floor and with wooden ladles and spoons as a kid. And so I said, we'll give it a shot. It was a nightmare. I had no idea. And still to this day, I am very envious of trombone players because it's such an amazing instrument and you really have to know what you're doing. So it was the happiest person in the world when I was in, I think like sixth grade, was my music teacher, Mr. Hess in Akron, Ohio. When I told him I was going from the trombone to play drums and I started taking drum lessons from him and then eventually private lessons, 2 years learning all the rudiments, playing just snare drum before I ever even had a full set of drums.
So you get out to to Phoenix. You're 15. At that point, you've already started. You've been playing drums. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been playing about 3 or 4 years.
Okay. How do you get hooked up with the guys then in the Spiders? Were they still the Spiders when you joined the band?
No, they were the Nazz. This was. I got to know everybody in the band when we went to a junior college in Glendale, Arizona, just part of Phoenix now, Glendale Community College. Yeah. And Vince went there, Alice, and Dennis went there. Glenn Buxton went there. And even John Spear, the original drummer for the Spiders and the Nazz, went there too. And I was friends with all of them. I got to meet Dennis and I were in art classes. Alice and I were in art class. Glenn and I were in art class. So when Glenn and I found out we were from Akron, Ohio, we became instant buddies. And I was in a band called the Holy Grail in Tempe, Arizona. So at the time, those were like the two biggest bands in Phoenix. And in the summer of love, 1968, that was after my second year at Glendale Community College, my band went to San Francisco, the Holy Grail. And by that time, it was the Nazz in Phoenix, and they moved to Los Angeles. And that's how we all left home.
And there's some story I read, and I don't know if this is true or not, so I'm asking you about it, that despite Alice shooting you once in the leg or the ankle, you stayed with the band. Did he actually mistakenly or accidentally shoot you at some point?
Yeah, we were out. That was early 1968 when I joined the band. They were still called the Nazz in late 67, and we had a house in Santa Monica, California. For Christmas time, we came back to Arizona to. My mother and my sister had moved to Texas, so I had no place to stay. So I'd either stay at Alice's house, Mr. and Mrs. Fournier were gracious to let me stay over there, or Dennis Dunaway would let me stay with his parents, Mr. and Mrs. Dunaway. So one night while we were there early 1968, Alice and I and Mike Allen, our roadie, our amp boy, who just wrote a book about the band. We went out jackrabbit hunting at night after we had a couple of beers.
What could possibly go wrong? Jackrabbit hunting at night after a couple of beers.
Yeah, I thought I saw one out there at the headlights because it's dark, obviously. It's about midnight in Arizona. The light was out there. I shot at one. You can see their eyes light up. And he disappeared. And I thought maybe I hit him. So I ran out there. About 50 yards in front of the car. And when I was out there looking around, there's no rabbit. I never hit him. All of a sudden I heard the damn gun go off and I feel this excruciating pain in my left interior ankle bone. It's like Babe Ruth hit me with a home run swing right in the ankle with the impact. Wow. It was really painful to say the least. So I had my boots on. I took them off and, because I looked and it wasn't a hole in my boot, but it was a .22 slug that we were shooting. Alice had a gun, I had a gun, and Mike Allen had a gun. So I don't think Alice ever fired a gun before in his life, to tell you the truth. I was raised on weapons since I was a kid. I was in Scouts and went to Camp Perry in Ohio for a lot of their meets and championships. So I knew a lot about them, but I didn't obviously know enough about standing in front of somebody that really had no idea how to use a gun. So it was an accident, and we went to the hospital, got a cast on my leg, which didn't stop me from playing, but it was a hell of a night. That's all I can say. So it's a true story.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you didn't hold it against them.
Well, as I always say, payback's going to be a bitch.
Well, so the new album, The Revenge of Alice Cooper, is out today. And one of the, you know, exciting, amazing things about it is that it features you playing alongside Dennis Dunaway, Michael Bruce, back with Alice. From your perspective, how did this new album come together? What got you guys to record another full length, the first in like some 50 plus years?
Well, you know, we've maintained our friendship over the years. We got together for a project in the mid 80s, Dennis and I, with Alice and Kane Roberts to do some pre-production for the Constrictor album. It had been actually 10 years since we had seen each other at that point. And occasionally we'd go out to Arizona through the 80s and the 90s and always writing music, swapping stories, hanging out. I was in the residential real estate business for 30 years, so that always gave me the opportunity to just, you know, do my own schedule. I could get away for a couple of days or a couple of weeks or maybe a month. So the friendship continued all the time through the 90s and the early 2000s. Of course, Alice and Bob Ezrin contacted Michael and I to submit some songs and record them for the Welcome to My Nightmare sequel album in 2010, which led up to a concert in 2010 for Alice Cooper's Christmas Pudding for his Solid Rock Foundation. And from that, while we were there, we knew we were nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But while we were there in rehearsal for that that pudding show, we received the announcement that we were in fact inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2011. So that was key. And then there were some shows that we did together. 2015, 2017, we went to the UK and played five shows with Alice and his touring band. And again, during that time, I bought the house in 2015, was in Arizona for the winters, and got together with Michael and got together with Alice. We wrote some songs that are on this album. And Dennis had written a great book, and we had done a concert in Dallas, Texas, around a signing. So things were getting, you know, we were working more together. Then we did some songs on Paranormal and then Detroit Stories. So, yeah, you know, during COVID, Alice had, you know, he had talked to Bob, because I wasn't interested in doing anything about Bob Ezrin. And also Ear Music was very into it, about doing a reunion album for the original Alice Cooper group. And of course, you know, we all said yes. We'd already been doing things in the studio together, so it was just really the next logical step.
You know, you mentioned something that you guys all kept contact, remained friends over the years. I was thinking it would be pretty awkward if you hadn't, because didn't your sister married Dennis Dunaway, right?
Yeah, so Dennis is my brother-in-law, right? Exactly, 100%.
Yeah, he's your brother-in-law, right? So yeah, are they still married?
Oh yeah, they're still married. My sister just had her birthday earlier this month, and you know, it's great. I mean, as a rhythm section, Dennis and I have always been close, and we just always had something that, you know, it's really not much time when we get together and play. But again, over all the years since the 70s and the 80s, you know, we've had bands, we've recorded albums together. We've done projects together, so we've continued that rhythm section, and that's never gotten stale. It's always been exciting, and then, you know, the Hall of Fame and what have you. Yeah, so it's a true family situation as well. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, Bob Ezrin and Alice, of course, and Mike Bruce, you know, we're all brothers and kindred spirits, and it's great chemistry every single time that we're together to do a project.
Well, you know, one of the strengths of y'all as a band was that people are always contributing songwriting ideas. Everybody contributes to the songs. And I believe one of the tunes that you helped write is Crap That Gets in the Way of Your Dreams. Is that one of the songs that you came up with the music for?
Yeah, that particular song, Alice had the original ideas for that. And that was probably the first song in 2016, okay. The first year that I was in Arizona for the winter, that Mike and Alice and I got together and worked on. We worked on that. We worked on Money Screams. That was a song of mine. And we also worked on Intergalactic Vagabond Blues. And another one, the Social Debris, that was on the Detroit Stories album, we also had worked on that. So we all collaborated. We all worked on those together and all of our names on those songs together. So, yeah, those were some of the early songs that, you know, that, again, we got together and worked as a collaborating group.
So on Crap That Gets in the Way of Your Dreams, I really enjoy that Kinks-like riff there, guitar riff. Now, who came up with the riff?
I think actually Alice, you know, Alice plays guitar. So I think he came up with that riff. He comes up with a lot of great ideas. He's a musician as well as a singer and a great lyricist.
Very cool. Well, I want to ask you about another tune in a moment off the album. But one of the questions I'm asking everybody is, do you remember the Newlyweds TV show?
I remember the dating game.
You know, they had the couples that would come out and they'd
dance. Yeah, yeah.
The Newlyweds were like couples that were newly married, and they would ask them questions, and then they would see whether the husband and the wife they could if they knew the answer that the other people would say. I guess most famously there was
I remember it.
Yeah. Okay. So infamously they had an episode where they asked what's the strangest place you ever made whoopee, and the woman talked about a place where the sun doesn't shine and everybody's kind of mouths dropped open because they were thinking of a physical place and not a place on the body necessarily. But to you guys, what is the weirdest or craziest show that you've ever done?
You know, yeah, you're asking one of the craziest bands in the world, which one's the craziest show?
That's why I'm asking the question, right?
Yeah, and I think just from the standpoint of historically, there were a lot of big turning points for us, and I'll have to name two of them. The first one, of course, was when school's out and we headlined at the Hollywood Bowl. And we had the panties thrown out of the helicopters, and we had Wolfman Jack introduce us, which was amazing. And he came out on a camel, and there was an elephant there, and dancing girls, and it was just for us, it was homecoming. I mean, we're from Phoenix, Arizona, but we went to California to make it. My band that went to San Francisco unfortunately didn't make it, so I ended up moving in with the guys in Santa Monica, and their drummer quit. So that was how I got in the band. And so we struggled. We lived in Topanga Canyon. We lived in Hollywood Hills, and it all came together. So for us to go out on the road and leave LA and move to Detroit and then move to Connecticut and have the success that we did, with the Love to Death Killer and School's Out and going back and do that. That was a monumental show for us to do. And after School's Out, we never opened for another band in our career. And the other one, of course, is near the last that we did, which was in Sao Paulo, Brazil, when we played in front of an audience of over 125,000 people indoors, which, we were used to massive crowds by then, but to see 125,000 people indoors and then they're just pushing from the back, and it's like a wave in the ocean. You could see the push come all the way to the front of the stage, and then the stage would start to move. They literally built that stage for us, and people were getting crushed up in the front. They were pulling them out and taking them to ambulances, and the police had machine guns. They came out on the front of the stage, shot the machine guns in the air in this building, and told everybody to calm down or the show would stop. So I'll just leave it at that. That's pretty freaking crazy. So there were a lot
that
of
is other, pretty crazy.
Yeah, there were a lot of other things, but that one where, and as far as we were concerned, The police down there were more like punks with machine guns. And they all dressed the same, but they really were laughing every time they would do something crazy. But, you know, to sit there in front of 125,000 people and put rounds from a machine gun up into the ceiling of this building, and then everybody cooled out and we continued our show. So that probably is, right there at the top, like the Hollywood Bowl for us as far as a crazy show.
Well, so far I've only spoken to Alice, and yeah, that the San Paolo one is the one that he mentioned.
Yeah, well, damn good reason too. I mean, we had bodyguards all the time. They really had never had Shep Gordon, our manager of Live Enterprises. They realized that there had never been a big act go to Brazil, and so we were one of the first big acts. You know, the Stones never went, the Beatles never went, and now it's a huge spot to play for every big rock band in the world. Has been for a long time. And we kind of broke that ground. You know, we did a lot of things for the first time, and a lot of that was because of Shep, a lot of because of Bob Ezrin. But you know, it was the music in our show that got us there. But that was another big one. And plus, for 25 years, we held the Guinness World Book record for the largest indoor concert of 125,000 plus people. And that's the number that was in the newspaper the next day. I know different numbers have been around, but that's the official number that was in the newspaper the next day, because I have a copy of it in my archives.
Wow. Well, another song on The Revenge of Alice Cooper, the new album, that I think is great is Kill the Flies. And I wanted to ask you about that one. What triggered its fruition? How'd you guys come up with that?
Well, my solo project, Neil Smith Killsmith, has been around for almost 20 years. And my latest, and I'm always submitting songs that I put on my Killsmith project to Alice and to Michael and to Bob Ezrin. And a lot of them I had submitted for this Revenge of Alice Cooper album. And one that they liked and wanted to do they wanted to do some changes on it. It's a little different than my version of it, was Kill the Spiders. And mine's basically about somebody that fell through the cracks and ends up in an insane asylum. And it's kind of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest inspired.
Okay.
And, that's mine. But then I love Alice and Bob's treatment of the song to go a little bit more toward the Dwight Fry sort of early Alice Cooper, one of the personas that he took on stage and on record. And I really was happy with actually both versions, but it's 100%, vintage Alice Cooper in my book. And Alice does an amazing dramatic performance on that song.
Yeah, I agree. So the lyrics, though, he came up with the lyrics as they are now?
Well, majority of the song, I wrote all the lyrics to. It's on my, on the new Killsmith album, Hard in a Rock Place. Mm-hmm. But Alice always, they're his songs when he sings them. He has the liberty, and everybody in the band, I'm 100% guaranteed that whatever Alice comes up with, he has to sing it, he has to perform it, he has to believe in it. And so he changed some of the lyrics on the song, as he does sometimes, or once in a while he'll leave all the lyrics on there. So it just depends on how he reads, how feels the song. But nobody is one way or another, nobody's ever disappointed, I guarantee that.
Well, man, Neil, I gotta cut us off now. I gotta thank you so much for helping us cap off our Alice Cooper week here in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
All right, Maverick, thank you very much, man. Had a great day today, and I hope that a lot of people enjoy the album. I think the original fans will, but I'm hoping that some younger rock fans that are not too happy with what's available in rock and roll, get out there and buy a guitar and start playing some crazy music.
Sounds good. We're going to give a listen now to Kill the Flies off the new album, The Revenge of Alice Cooper, here in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
it's okay with me. I love these walls and lonely halls. It's where I'm supposed to be. But when I'm lying awake at night, oh, reeling from my meds, there's something flying around my face, buzzing around my head.
We just heard Kill the Flies off the new Alice Cooper album, The Revenge of Alice Cooper. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Neil Smith, the drummer in the original band, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Be sure and check out our Coolest Conversations that feature Dennis Dunaway, the band's original bass player, as well as Alice himself. As always, your Coolest Conversations are presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.